We are now recording.
Thank you, Kurt. It is June 28th, 9 o'clock. It's time to call the session of the Board of Technical Registration into order. Kurt, could you please do a roll call, please?
Mr. Gilmore?
Present.
Mr. Kolecka?
Here.
Mr. Hack?
Here.
Mr. Sales?
Present.
Mr. Nesgood?
Here.
Dr. Campbell? Dr. Campbell? Ms. Hovick?
Here.
Ms. Lindgren? Ms. Skanky? Mr. Wilson? We have a quorum.
We have a quorum. Thank you, Mr. Hayden. Okay. Call the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call of the public for no more than 3 minutes, pursuant to ARS 38-421-01H.
This call is now being recorded.
All right.
Great.
The board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public, unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Is there anyone wishing to approach the board for discussion?
Do we have a call in?
We received something from Mr. Schwagel, David Schwagel. Is he participating online?
Mr. Schwagel, are you online?
I do not see him listed on the
people
online right now.
Okay.
Julie, did he have any more contact with you?
Okay. If there's no one else who wants to address the board at this time, then let's proceed to the adoption of minutes.
Mr. Chairman, just letting you know that Dr. Campbell has just joined the meeting.
Oh, great. Okay, Kurt, I've done one of those things where I touch things and screen disappeared.
On adoption of minutes?
I think it might not happen.
Oh, for your PDF projector.
It's right there.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm challenged. Thank you.
Plenty of support.
Okay, board members, any discussion on the minutes? If not, they'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Blake. I'll make a motion to adopt the minutes from the May 24th board meeting as currently written.
Thank you, Mr. Kolecka. Is there a second?
This is Scott Sales. I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor, I think we can do a roll. Should we do a roll call? Can we do a verbal?
Verbal.
Yeah. Let's do a verbal. All those in favor say aye.
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 Anybody opposed? Okay, that motion carries. Okay, let's move on to the consent agenda. All items on the consent agenda will be considered by the board in a single motion or a single action item unless a board member wishes to remove a specific item for review, discussion, or action separately from other consent agenda items. Anybody on the board want to pull any of these items? If not, then Julie, I'll turn it over to you.
I did just want to note there was a typo in one of the memos, just so the board's aware, under 5A7A, the correct year should have been that we received the application in 2022 and the applicant is requesting an extension until 2023. So apologize for that. But other than that, I think it's been included in your board packet for review.
Thank you, Julie. Any discussion by the board on any of these items? If not, let's proceed to a motion.
Mr. Chair, Chair, I move to propose approving all the licensing matters under 5A. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and 7.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Anyone opposed?
Call out Dr. Campbell.
And oh, I'm sorry. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Okay. Is that the only one on?
And Hovick.
And Ms. Hovick, please.
Aye.
Thank you. That gives us a unanimous vote. Okay, let's move on to the enforcement matters. we have no one for either 6A's or B. Okay, we don't have anybody attending for 6A1 or 6B1. Is that correct, Kurt or Hayden? Okay, let's go to 6B1 then, as long as we have a attendee. This is case number HI-22-018. The synopsis of this complaint is that on January the 21st, 2022, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after conducting home inspection at 2130 West Highland Avenue in Phoenix, on or about September 1st, 2021, failed to report on the adverse condition of three broken beams visible in the attic of the residence. We have a staff recommendation. There's an investigative conclusion. Yes, the investigation concludes that the respondent may have violated Board Statute ARS 32-128-C4 as it relates to AAC R-430-30101. And the respondent may have failed to conduct a home inspection in accordance with the standards of professional practice for Arizona home inspectors regarding home inspection on September 1st, 2021. There is a staff recommendation. Due to the de minimis nature of the identified reporting deficiencies, the board staff recommends that the board issue a respondent letter of concern advising him to review the standards of professional practice for Arizona home inspectors in order to ensure that all his future home inspection reports meet such standards. Okay.
Mr. Chair, before we, if I may, I'm hearing a little reverb on the thing, so I'm not sure if somebody's on, not on mute, or it's playing back there. It's very silent, but I want to make sure it's nice
I hear
clear.
It too, yeah.
Please.
I'm going to mute everyone else except for us on the phones.
Okay, thank you.
Is it not the air conditioning?
Now you can hear.
Okay, thanks for coming in. Please identify yourself and give us a kind of a summary of your position here and if you understand the recommendation from staff.
My name is Andrew McGill. I'm the homeowner for the residence of 2130 West Highland Avenue. And I don't quite understand what was said or what the recommendation is.
There was an EAC committee called for that.
Actually, Jen.
I'm sorry. This is a letter of concern. I'm getting my.
This was based on the two assessors that reviewed the complaint.
Right. They did not call for an EAC. This went out for review, and the enforcement supervisor committee, the two people that looked at it said the complaint was pretty minor, and so they did not recommend that a hearing occur. So they've suggested, recommended staff, there be just a letter of concern issued to the respondent, Mr. Smontzler, who prepared the report. So it's non-disciplinary action from our board to Mr. Smontzler, but it just calls for a letter of concern. You have questions about what's going on here? Mr. Cartel, can you give us a kind of a summary of your understanding of this case?
Sure. The allegations that came in from Mr. McGill was in reference to the broken beams after the home inspection was done. The evidence that we had was a contractor had taken a look at it. I believe it was, I'm forgetting his name now, I apologize.
His name is Mr. Dan Maddock.
Mr. Maddock. He was going to do some work on the house. As part of the work on the house, he was going to take out a wall. But before he did that, he was going to check the attic to make sure it wasn't a load-bearing wall before taking it out. While doing that, he observed the three broken beams. According to the contractor, the beams were visible from the attic access point and did not require him to move anything to see them. That was a difference in opinion between the contractor and the home inspector. According to the home inspector, and there were pictures on both sides. According to the home inspector, he did look into the attic accessway. In his report, he states that the attic was too shallow or too narrow of a way to actually access. And the contractor said the same thing as far as accessing it further. Where they differ is that the contractor said that the damage was visible from the access point. The contractor said that it was not. And then, like I said, there are pictures on both sides that show different things. Apparently the broken beams were in a different location of the attic compared to the pictures that the home inspector took of the attic. In his home inspection report, he does suggest and recommend that a further inspection be done by a roofer prior to purchase because of the issues with the attic. Apparently, the attic the roof is built over the top of another roof on an older home, which creates some problems. So the home inspector did not observe or report on the broken beams. However, he did note that there were some possible issues with the roof and the attic and suggested that or recommend that a further inspection be done by a professional. We did have this sent out for two individual assessments by EAC members. Both EAC members found that the initial allegations were not substantiated based on the probability that it is possible that he did not readily see the damage and by our standards do not require to enter an access that is not accessible, and they're not required to move anything to observe something. So we do have a difference in statement between the contractor and the home inspector. However, the home inspector did recommend the additional inspection that was not done. The two assessors did find some additional issues, deficiencies in the report, but they were fairly minor and there wasn't a whole lot of them. So that's where the letter of concern would come into play, is the identified deficiencies that were found by the homeless, by the assessors.
Great, thanks for that summary. Board members have any questions?
I guess I'm not sure who the question should be directed to, but how long does the letter of concern stay on this individual's record? Does it cycle off at some point, or is it just a permanent thing?
No, but it's not visible as a disciplinary action, though.
A letter of concern is a non-disciplinary resolution.
So it isn't anything that would be viewable by somebody else? Or
would they have to report that on their renewal?
No.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
It's only accessible through a public records request. So it's not something they can just look on the internet.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Is that clear to you what happened? Apparently the inspector looked up there and didn't see anything, and then the contractor showed up and suddenly was visible, and we can't tell from this stage who is...
I do understand. I do have a comment on that. I was actually with my contractor the day that he looked into the attic and saw the broken beams, and he actually allowed me to go and look for myself, and I didn't need to move anything myself, but I just popped my head into the attic, scanned, and saw the broken beams from the entrance of the attic.
Okay.
And one of the pictures in the report is, I think, almost 3 feet off from the picture that was shown from the contractor.
Okay. In this case, we have no way to corroborate any of that stuff, information, and the inspector did call for or make a recommendation that there be subsequent evaluation by a roofer. So with that, I don't think there's anything else to pursue here. Is there a motion then to accept the staff recommendation?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to propose the board issue the respondent a letter of concern advising to review the standards of professional practice for Arizona home inspectors.
Great. Is there a second?
Second, Mike Kalika.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor of accepting staff recommendation for a letter of concern, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Campbell?
Did he? Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Hobick?
I think she was having audio issues and dropped off.
Okay.
I'll have to come back. The counter is absent for right now.
Air bumps.
Okay, so we have a unanimous vote. Otherwise, we have quorum. So I think the motion does pass. Mm-hmm. If she comes back online, then she can maybe get involved in the next discussion. Okay, thank you for attending and sharing your position on this. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's do
1268-681.
As just a motion to accept or dismiss. Mm-hmm. Okay, 6A1 is a recommendation for dismissal. Can I get a motion from board members to follow the staff recommendation for dismissal for 6A1?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I motion to dismiss 6A1.
Is there a second?
Real quick, I didn't know if we wanted to hear anything from staff beforehand.
Just available.
Okay.
If you're comfortable being on without it, I don't have a problem.
Okay.
Any discussion? Okay.
I second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. This is case number P22036. We have staff recommendation for dismissal. All those in favor say aye.
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 Is Ms. Hovick? Is she back online yet? No. Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Okay. For those attending, we have unanimous vote. Okay, 6A1 is resolved. Okay, let's move on to 6C. Mr. Whitney, are you here?
Yes.
Please come forward. Okay, this is item 61, HI-22-013. The synopsis for this complaint is on December the 16th, 2021. The board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after conducting home inspection at 22 East Lindsay Way in Sedona, Arizona, on or about June 18th, 2021, prepared a home inspection report that failed to include evidence of water leakage on the walls and ceiling of bedrooms located in the front of the house. (Clears There is a staff recommendation to accept the signed consent encompassing the following order: letter of reprimand, state suspension and probation, one peer review, administrative penalty in the amount of $350, and a cost of investigation in the amount of $322. Mr. Whitney, will you share your position on this case with the board? Introduce yourself, please. And
My name is Dalen Whitney. I own Century Inspecting. When it comes to the allegations, I don't agree with what the homeowner says on, you know, because the condition of the home did not present any water damage at the time. Him and I had a conversation about that prior to him reaching out to the board. So, and he seemed like that was an understand. You know, he understood that. With regards to the decisions that were made after the EAC meeting, I don't think it's fair. The issues were with my report, I've corrected, I've gone through and just edited verbiage and things to make it to line up a bit better with the standards, so that there was no question there. And I'm happy to have, you know, do an inspection with someone else, have them verify that. So, I guess if I had any question, I suppose it would be on the amounts that I'm paying, but even that I can step back.
We try and be consistent on those amounts.
I
and there is a signed consent, so we can, if, unless you're going to contest anything.
No,
in that.
I was just being funny.
Okay. any discussion by the board on this? If not, then I'd accept a motion for accepting staff recommendation to accept the signed consent agreement.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Kalaika. I motion to accept the signed consent agreement for agenda item 6C1.
Is there a second?
Dr. Campbell can second.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. We have a motion and a second to accept the signed consent agreement for HI 22-013. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Is Ms. Hovick back online yet, Kurt?
No.
Okay. For those present, we have a unanimous vote to accept and sign the consent agreement. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Have a great day.
The rest of the six C's are signed consents. So that's six. Anybody have discussion on any of the remaining six C items, 6C2, 3, 4, and 5?
Can we do this? Mr. Brown? Can we do this as one motion?
Mr. Chair, D1 and 2 also are signed consent agreements. I know they're agendized.
Oh, okay. All right. Can we just do a motion to tie all those together, Scott? Yeah.
Yes.
All right. That would be 6C2, 6C3, 6C4, 6C5, 6D1, and 6D2 all have signed consent agreements. Is there a motion to accept these agreements recommended by and signed by the respondents?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I propose a motion to accept the signed consent agreements under 6C2, 3, 4, 5, and
D1, D2.
Yeah, D1 and D2.
Great.
This is Mike Blake. I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to accept the signed consent agreements for 6C2, 6C3, 6C4, 6C5. 61 and 62. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Mr. Campbell, Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Thank you. And Ms. Hovick is apparently not online yet. So all those intending voted in favor. Thank you. 63 and 4. Okay, 63 and 64. Scott, we can handle these as one discussion. They're tied together.
Certainly, if the chair calls both items, yes.
Okay, and we have attendees, Mr. Willer and Mr. Tarbo. Okay. You're present. Please come forward. Two cases are tied together. They're case number 63 and 64. HI 22-011 and HI 22-019. These are submitted as separate complaints, but the consent agreement is really for both of these. The complaint, there is a synopsis of this complaint, is that on November 24, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after being paid $3,200, and agreeing to provide 30 parallel inspections to his client, DJ Tarbell, failed to provide a parallel inspection in accordance with AAC R430-01021. It is alleged that the respondent conducted an incomplete parallel inspection and prepared an inaccurate report for the property of TJ Tarbell in Oracle, Arizona, and did not require TJ Tarbell to prepare a written report for the parallel inspection and therefore failed to provide a report review. Kirk, I was expecting Mr. Blaker. Is he online?
Mr. Blaker, are you online? If you're muted, if you're on your phone, star 6 to unmute. On your computer, there's the microphone button.
I'll do a quick review of 64, which is the synopsis of that complaint. On January 24th, 2022, board staff received a complaint alleging that respondent, after being paid $1,600 and agreeing to provide 30 parallel inspections to his client, Jeffrey Willer, failed to provide adequate parallel inspections and failed to provide feedback and reports prepared by the client. It is further alleged the respondent conducted incomplete and unprofessional parallel inspections with his client that did not meet the requirements specified in AAC R430-102C, or 1021, excuse me. Mr. Blaker apparently is not in attendance, so gentlemen, let's start with Mr. Willer. Can you give us a quick review of your position on this?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, board, thank you for having us. It was an agreement that was entered into with Mr. Blaker that there would be a provision on the home inspections that were not met. We did try and exit out of that agreement with proration of funds for time given to myself, and that was disagreed. There was a disagreement on that. He did state in his contracts that there would be the 30 inspections provided for. He did not provide one. The properties in question that we did do an inspection on were provided by myself, with agreement from the homeowners that were actually looking to sell. Also, no home inspection was provided to me. An inspection was provided to him by me. And I received no feedback from those. He also refused to sign anything or do anything in writing. He stated that everything would be handed to him in writing, but he would not give me anything back. So the affidavit that he was responsible to provide for the home inspection, saying that he could, in fact, give that to me, he refused to sign, and felt very fraudulent because the service is not rendered.
Okay. Mr. Tarbell, do you want to give us a quick summary of your position in this as well?
Yeah, mine is very similar to Mr. Willer's. Mr. Blaker did not, after entering into the contract with him, he had no inspections, paid inspections for me to parallel, but he asked if we could go ahead and do my own home, went ahead and did that inspection, but quickly on during the inspection, he spent a lot of time talking about his past school that he ran, things about his personal life. He wanted to get done with the inspection really quickly because the football was on. As we went through the house, he just superficially checked items. He did write a inspection report after we had presented our complaint to him to try to get out of the contract that we had with him. But he presented me with a copy of his inspection report that he wrote up. I did send a video of the interaction that we had. The inspection report, I have a copy of it here, kind of went through there. There's 80 inaccuracies in what he had done. He made up a lot of the information, and that was the problem with doing the parallel inspection with him, was the fact that he was not really doing an inspection that we could follow along. He was not hitting all the items that needed to be hit. We weren't really learning anything by paralleling and watching the inspection that he was doing because he wasn't doing a complete inspection. That's where I feel that he was not providing what he said he was going to provide, according to what was read in the affidavit. The affidavit was supposed to show that we were supposed to follow along with him and follow a full inspection. Like Mr. Wheeler said, when I asked him for the affidavit to actually prove that he was able to do the inspections, we just took his word for it, that he was in good standing and that he had done 250 paid inspections to know that he could actually do it, but he never offered any proof of that. Any phone conversations or text or emails, he would not respond to. Everything needed to be over the phone, nothing in writing on his end, even though we responded in writing to him.
So the inspection occurred at your home. You attended that inspection,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't ask you to do your own parallel inspection?
No.
Okay. Mr. Willer, you did do two inspection reports.
Yes.
And submitted it to Mr. Blaker.
Yes.
And by AAC R430-012, the parallel inspector is supposed to have come inspect you within 10 days. Obviously, that did not occur. But he did not ask you to prepare a report.
No, he said that he would go ahead and do that.
Okay. Yeah, there seemed to be some inconsistency and poor communication, obviously, but I want to open this up for discussion. Board members have any questions?
We have some
here. Mr. Blaker is here.
Is here, okay.
If you would like to hear from him.
All right, Mr. Blaker, you familiar with these complaints? Can you share with the board your position on this, please?
Oh, I sure can. First of all, the first couple of inspections that we do with any student is not going to be 100% of the time on the items. There are going to be some things that are going to be skipped over. For instance, we haven't done any ladder safety yet. I will not let any of my students climb on a ladder until we've done our ladder safety session where they understand how important it is to climb the ladder correctly and safely. So we look at the roof from the ground. We look at, we don't go up into the attic yet. Keep in mind there's 30 chances to do that. It's not like they're not going to learn it. But when you do the first inspection, you do a lot of explaining. And it's not just inspected. So a normal inspection, in this gentleman's house, for instance, would probably take about 3.5 hours. I think we spent 4.5. Most of it, a lot of it's explanation. And, he had some really interesting things in his house that were very unusual and different, and so we spent time on that. Well, after you get to about 4.5 hours, it's dinner time. It's time to get on with the world. And so we open up the electrical panel, but we don't take the cover off because we can do that next time. We just make sure they know to sniff it, make sure that it's not powered with electricity, so when they touch it, they don't get shocked, and we go to the next item. In this particular house, we really didn't skip much except the attic, lifted the roof from the ground, and the electrical panel. There was some things, I don't think we looked at the evap cooler, which was on the ground. But other than that, we pretty much covered everything. But he had some very unusual things. He had a bedroom off the garage, he had another bedroom off that bedroom with no legal egress, so we had to talk about legal egress, we had to talk about other things, which is all part of the learning process. But to do 100% of the learning process on the first inspection, it's impossible. It takes a while to get that learning process covered, and it is. I mean, I've only had about 1,000 students. I know how to do it, believe me. And you can ask any of them.
I apologize. Jennifer Obeck is joining the meeting at 9:36.
Okay, thank you. Did you follow up with Mr. Charbel and suggest there might need to be a second inspection of this home?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Did you follow up, since you were running out of time, did you make any arrangements to come back and do a subsequent inspection to complete the standard of practice checklist items?
I guess I didn't make myself clear. My students get, if they haven't chosen some kind of a software to use or some other method to produce a report, we give them a checklist report off of one of the more popular, comes from one of the more popular softwares that's out there for doing the inspection process. I call it the information gathering system. Because until they've chosen a way to compile the report, how are they going to get anything out of what we're doing? How can they produce a report until we do one and they follow around and make their notes and then produce a report when they've chosen a software? I encourage them to do that before they've done 15. Some wait that long. And some get it right away. And at that point in time, they can start producing inspections with their reporting system based on the information gathered during the field inspection. What I told both these gentlemen is that we want them to, you know, choose a software as soon as they can, because the more time they have in practicing using it, the more they'll understand it and be able to use it better. But unfortunately, most softwares are kind of complicated. They have databases you have to learn, and there's a tremendous time frame involved. When you're doing 30 inspections, you've never done them before, you have to learn a database to begin with. I often tell my students that the first one might take you as long as 9 hours for the first one. Mm-hmm. I try to help them by producing one of my own and hand it to them. I don't have to, I try to. As far as getting their reports back within 10 working days, it was 14 days after they signed up that they came into my office and said they wanted to quit. One of the reasons, and I probably should make, I should wait till I ask this question.
Well,
I think your question was answered. Bill.
Sorry?
I said I don't think he answered your question.
Yeah, dude. So there was no provision made, no subsequent schedule to go back and complete the inspection.
No,
your
deal.
Point is you can't do it all in one trip, I understand that. You give them another model of report to use as a basis of reference, which makes perfect sense. I guess I have a question. What triggers an official home inspection that's part of the 30? When does that start? Does that first one that he did at his home count as the first inspection?
Yes.
But he never did a report.
Pardon me?
He never did a report
No. That
you could evaluate,
No. Which
is required by ARS.
Right.
Okay. I guess I'm questioning, why didn't you have...
The other gentleman did. He produced...
But we're talking about Mr. Trouble right now. And maybe you want to get through a bunch of these reports and you go back, now that you've learned this, you go back and complete a report later. I don't know what your process is. It doesn't...
Well, it's interesting. And I have to admit that the rule is almost impossible to follow as far as returning the report within 10 working days or 10 days after receipt. Because sometimes these guys come in at the 14th inspection with 14 reports. It takes me an hour and a half apiece at least just to check them. At least. And if they correct them and hand them back and I check them again, that's another hour. So you can imagine the amount of time that as an inspector I have to spend on my students, and I do. I take it very seriously. I think it's extremely important that they get taught, not just showed the process, that they actually learn. And they take advantage of my experience, which is vast, you probably know. But I didn't have that lucky opportunity when I started in 1985. There were no schools, unless I went, there was one school in Florida. And
that's not the issue. The issue is you had a responsibility to your client to do the parallel inspections, and right. Apparently there's a breakdown there. And the same thing happened with Mr. Willard.
They call me the night before they can do an inspection to find out what we have available. And if I don't have a paid inspection available, I have others available to inspect. For instance, we use Open Door.
Was that expressed to Mr. Tarbill or Mr. Waller that you could do other parallel inspections on other homes?
Okay.
As far as I know, you just did one for his home.
Right, on his house. Okay. And the deal was originally that both of them would do them all together. That's why one only had to pay $1,600, I think, half price. So I could do them both together. I can share the same inspections and the same field inspections. It didn't work out that way. One gentleman couldn't come to the first two. The other gentleman couldn't come to the third one. That's my problem.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to just say that's fine.
Mr.
What we do as fast and as many as we can do that they can do. It's not up to me.
Yeah, I understand that. But the opportunity has to be made available to them, and that apparently was your responsibility.
That's right. But see, within the 10-day time frame when I signed up and when they came in my office and said, I'm going to quit, I didn't have much of an opportunity to did check over their report and was there to hand it to them. They walked in my office, but he refused it. To take it.
So, Mr. Willer, you did two reports after the inspections, sent them to Mr. Blaker, and in the 10 days, you now got a response.
Correct. The first one was given in writing, as he requested no emails, since he considers emails unprofessional. And the second one, I realized that gave no record on my ends, the account received. So the second one was emailed, and I was using Spector at the time, so that gave me a log showing that if he had opened it or not.
Okay.
So one was handed hard copy.
So, Mr. Tarbill, from the time you started, you filed a complaint with the board on the 24th of November. You started the engagement on the 5th, so there's like a three-week period from start to finish.
When Mr. Willard and I approached Mr. Blaker about wanting to dissolve the relationship, I originally met with Mr. Blaker on the 5th and paid him by check on the 5th, and then on the 12th is when we let him know that we wanted out. But the filing the complaint, it was somewhere about the 24th.
Ms. Roller?
Sir, to lend clarification also, we were not a joint package and that was never discussed. Regrettably, on my part, I went through to find someone that could instruct to gain licensing. I did find Mr. Blaker through the ASHI website, then went back to my online courses, and that was let known to other potential instructors. That way they might be able to find somebody. It's in Tucson, it's a little bit more difficult to find someone. And that's how
Found. So at this time, you're both still pursuing your 30 home inspections, but through a different service?
Completely, yes.
Okay. Board members, anybody want to have questions?
I'd like to hear from Mr. Blaker regarding your opinion on the actual consent agreement. Have you reviewed that? Sorry, have you reviewed the proposed consent agreement?
I have, yes.
And are you open to accepting that?
Oh, absolutely not. You put me out of business. And I haven't done anything wrong. Nothing.
Okay. Okay, we can't really address your contractual relationship between these gentlemen, but it appears, though, that there's a requirement that you provide a service to these guys as the professional. And
absolutely.
there appears to be a breakdown here. Because he submitted two reports to you. He submitted two reports to you, and you had 10 days by state law, by Arizona or by statute, to get him back a response, which did not occur.
Response. You mean a corrected report?
Correct.
I tried to hand it to him when he walked in to quit. But he wouldn't take it, so I have a FedEx.
Did that occur within the 10 days, Mr. Willer?
12 days.
Or, yeah, Mr. Willer?
When
you went to see him to, quote, end the relationship, had it been 10 days since you submitted the report?
I think it was just approaching 10 days from the first report. It would be 2 days out from the second.
So it was less than 10 days when you went to see him from the time you submitted the report? Okay, and that's what posed my question. But what triggers an official report, parallel inspection report by these applicants as part of the 30?
They hand it to me. I check it over and make my comments throughout. I hand it back to them. In some cases, I would notate, I want you to make corrections and hand it back to me. In some cases, I say, just review the report and learn this for the next one. I never used to do that, but I understand that's okay now. So it saves me a bunch of time if I don't have to review it a second time. I think it should be like that's just me. Believe me, we spend plenty of time on these reports and with the students with each one. I mean, I've done four students since these kids quit. Finished them. I mean, it's not a matter of, it's also 10 days, I think it's 10 working days is what it says. If I'm not mistaken, in this particular case,
it's 10 calendar days. Let me read that sentence to you. Under AACR 430-1021, the applicant shall produce a written report for each parallel inspection, which the supervising certified home inspector serving as the parallel inspector shall review, analyze, correct, and return to the applicant within 10 calendar days. After receiving the written report.
That's the case in this case. The biggest problem with that is what happens when my student walks in and drops 14 reports down on the table and says, please check them.
That didn't happen here, though.
No, it happened to me yesterday.
That's not part of this discussion this morning. And you are not able to line up any other paid inspections for these guys to attend?
Well, we have as many houses to inspect as they want. They have time to do. We can do 5 in a day. We can push them and start early. We can go later.
Okay. That did not occur. Mr. Waller.
I feel like it might hold some bearing. Not to be overly subjective, because I realize it's work on work and some of this, but when we did our exit interview with Mr. Blaker, he did not try and hand me a report. We expressed our concerns for first and foremostly with what we were not receiving, or we felt we were not receiving, because we felt that he was entitled to an opportunity to try and rectify the situation, and that's what that attempt was. His response to us, our concerns of it not meeting the standards that were set before us as students, was that it doesn't matter what we put in the reports because the board doesn't care. And I am also a firefighter with Big Sharks Fire Medical District, and I have 4 days off in a row, and I will contact him the night before every day, and I have 4 days clear to do reports, and he would say he had nothing and would fall on me to provide one, and his response was, we can either go to a building site and just inspect a bunch of random buildings, or if I could provide him with a house, we could do my house, we could do a friend's house, things like that. But I feel with the professionalism that is required for us, seeing a paid inspection is very important for us to see how to deal with a client that is paying, that could potentially sue us for some of the very things that were brought before the board today. So when our expectations there may have been some miscommunication as far as that, but I feel like those matters are also part of this.
Kurt?
I apologize again. Ms. Skinke has joined the meeting.
Ah. Okay, thank you.
Colleen Lindgren is here as well.
Thank you, Ms. Colleen.
Mr. Chair, you're welcome to ask our investigator. Ms.
Yes. Lara. Yeah, I'm sorry. Ms. Lara, would you share your position on this and your research?
Yeah. So based on our definition, board's definition of parallel inspection, the applicant is the one to perform the parallel inspections. Mr. Blaker has indicated that the first 5 to 6 are performed by him, and the first five to six parallel inspections, and then once he feels comfortable that the students are ready, then they do the parallel inspections. But based on the board's definition, that's not how a parallel inspection should be performed. Part of it was, the concerning part was that an audio recording that was provided through the ledgers that the board does not care what's actually in the reports, just that it's completed. If they're not doing the full report, or excuse me, not the full parallel inspection, how are they supposed to know what's supposed to be in a parallel inspection report if they're not following the whole 84 item checklist?
Right, thank you.
Do you have any specifics? Questions. This is based on the board's definition of a parallel inspection. It was not completed that way.
So I guess that's why I was asking about the what triggers the home qualifying 30 inspections. If the first 5 or 6, they just observe, they parallel the inspection, do the observation, take their notes, they don't do a report for the first 5 or 6?
No, they do, as soon as they get their software. Then they have to put their notes into the software and produce a report, which is then checked by me, which is handed back to them, etc.
Was that made clear to you, gentlemen?
No.
Okay. It appears, though, there's some poor communication going on. Their expectations did not match what you were apparently proposing in your contract.
Can I ask a quick question?
Kurt?
Kurt Winter, Deputy Director. Has the funds that they paid and given back them in any way, shape, or form?
No, I haven't even had a request for that. Except
that's not
verbally.
True.
I asked them to give me a letter in writing, and we would give them something in return, depending on whether it was warranted or not. Some I haven't discounted, or the student has opportunities to get their money back. Let's just put it that way. sometimes not all, but you know, we've had students that got cancer, for instance, and of course we need to fund that. But the purpose of our contract requiring a non-refundable payment is to make them dedicated to what they're doing so they don't give up. It's very important to me that they finish this process or I'm wasting my time and my energies. And frankly, it's not easy. I don't make any profit if I'm not doing reports for these guys. I'm trying to improve the professionalism of our profession. I've always done that for 36 years, 7 years, whatever, how many years I've been doing this. And that's always been my goal, is to improve our profession and make it better. Most guys that do parallels just do a parallel inspection. They don't give any education, they don't give any training, they don't teach anything. They just have to do the reports. From day one, when we wrote the rules designed to make sure that the student understood the standards of professional practice. And that was the purpose of the parallel program. Not in training, but in teaching the standards, so they would follow the standards that were set forth for them. Well, that's fine, but that doesn't make them better inspectors. Well, it does a little bit.
That answered my question. That was just asking if you were going to refund the money or not. And he says it's not refundable in your contract.
It does, yeah. And it's tough. Like I said, the first one they do, it's likely to take them 9 hours. All of a sudden they go, wow, I don't want to do this. Now I spent a couple minutes of my time.
Do you, by chance, have like a little manual that you hand these guys to describe what to expect?
Other than an inspection report that they get to see after they've done one in the field of my own, and the checklist, the report review checklist, which they're required to fill out and turn in with their report that they complete. Not when they do the preliminary, just when they do it with their software. And then we use that to check what makes it easier on them, makes it easier on us. But then when they graduate, they know the standards are.
So this,
Mr. Trouble?
Sorry, so he's referring to the standards of practice time and time again. The inspection report that he did on my house, he did not hit the standards of practice. Following along, paralleling him or any inspector that we're paralleling, we're looking for all the items that we're supposed to be looking for, the standards of practice, so we can apply it to our own inspection reports. The inspection report that he gave to me, he did not hit on all of the standards of practice. A lot of the information that he put in his inspection report were just made up and don't even exist at the house. There's no way for him to hit all the standards of practice if he's not opening up, taking off the dead panel on the electrical service. If he's not opening a cupboard, if he's not checking all the receptacles that are accessible. These are items that are in the standards of practice, and he says that he's showing us, but he did not show us. Quickly on, you can see on the very first inspection that he was not hitting everything that we were supposed to be taught or that we were supposed to be observing, so we can apply it to our training and, you know, our practice as we start going on. This just did not happen. So that is why it didn't take much to find out. There's a lot of red flags. It was easy to find out that Mr. Blaker was not the person to be teaching us. He did talk about it, but a lot about his schools, and at some point in time, yeah, I think he was probably a very good instructor. He did very well. At this point in time, though, he's not doing that, and he's doing a disservice to anybody that's trying to get into the trade.
Mr. Blaker, did you review Mr. Charville's blue line comments on his report that listed all the things that were missed or didn't occur?
I never got a report from him.
You never responded to any of my communications.
phone calls, emails, or...
And my staff does my emails.
That was not made available, Mr. Blaker? The blue line comments from Mr. Turbo? Okay, it's in our report.
I have a copy of it here.
Yeah. That was not shared, though, apparently, Mr. Blaker?
We couldn't get in contact with him. He would not respond.
Mr. Blaker, we need to wrap this up. It appears there's a communication problem, and revised statute is pretty clear on your responsibility as the parallel inspector. I don't see anything that I heard this morning that's going to kind of absolve you of that responsibility.
I'm sorry, the responsibility is to...
Teaching these applicants...
No, there's no teaching responsibility in our statute.
I'm sorry?
There's no teaching responsibility in the statute.
Well, certainly, that's
only
what you're doing.
Only provide a parallel inspection.
Semantics. They're coming to you to learn how to do inspection, so it's a method of teaching.
100%. When we spent a half an hour talking about the cantilever floor that was rotted at the doorway on his house, two stories down, and was kind of spongy, we spent about 30 minutes talking about cantilevers. Well, that's 30 minutes I can't, at the end of the inspection, I don't have time to take the cover off the electrical panel. We'll do that on the next inspection. Just say you saw the electrical panel. Actually, it is required to take the cover off. But we don't... You can't teach this profession in one inspection in one day.
Understood. We're not going to dispute that. I think it's just the timing and thorough reviews and the inability to give them the responses they needed on the inspection reports that they did. So, like I said, I want to discussion. Like I say, I don't see anything that's going to change my opinion regarding this consent agreement. I think we need to, hold on. I'm going to close this off for discussion by the board right now. So, board, any other discussion on this? Because I'm ready for a motion. We can offer the consent agenda or consent agreement if you're receptive. But it appears that you're not going to be signing this thing. So we can go to hearing. We can go to a public, you can go to a administrative law hearing if you don't want to accept this consent agreement, but that's your choice.
I'd like to make a motion.
Wait a minute.
Sorry, I was just going to say I would recommend that if you would like to make a motion to proceed with the consent agreement, that you go ahead and leave the 30-day option, and if not signed at that point, then it can proceed.
Okay. Is that in the consent agreement? It is.
It is. It's right there in the staff recommendations as well.
You've read through the consent agreement, Mr. Blaker?
Yes, I have.
The board's going to offer you this consent agreement for your acceptance, Kurt.
You want to say you haven't made the motion yet?
No, but I'm just kind of explaining what's going on. And it's your choice to sign this within 30 days. We're going to make a motion at this point by the board to move forward. And then we can have another discussion after the vote. Board, want to entertain a motion on this?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to offer a consent agreement for items 6D3 and 4.
Okay.
This is Jennifer Hobick.
Thank you, Ms. Hobick.
And if I may, does that include any procedural follow-up, as in if not accepted in 30 days, then proceed to an administrative hearing?
Is that already in the document?
As recommended.
Well, yeah.
As recommended.
Yeah. If it doesn't get signed in 30 days, then it goes to formal hearing.
Okay. Very good. So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
And Stanky? Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Okay, we have a unanimous vote to offer the consent agreement. If you choose not to sign this within 30 days, then this goes to formal hearing. Is that clear?
Yes, it is.
Very good.
Why you're giving me such a terrible consent agreement? You put me out of business. 6-month suspension of my license puts me out of business.
You're not, your license is not suspended.
It's a stay.
It says that in the consent agreement.
It's a stayed suspension.
It just says as long as you satisfy the items of the consent agreement, then you remain in business. Which is that you have to satisfy the consent agreement, otherwise, then you're in violation.
Payments or whatever it might be.
Everything that's outlined.
On my license, though.
I have to also point out the fact that he wouldn't be able to do parallel inspections with a disciplinary action for about 3 years.
3 years. Understood. Okay, we have a motion and a second. This decision has been made by the board. Gentlemen, thanks for coming in. Good luck to you, gentlemen. Hope you can get your own inspection completes.
Thank you
completed.
For your time.
Thank you.
Is there any school that actually offers this, or is it just people that have a license that offer it?
There are some schools, but I think to become a parallel inspector, you have to qualify.
You have to pass some course or something like that before you.
And a certain number of inspections completed.
Off the agenda, guys.
So yeah, we're off the agenda. Sorry.
I can answer your question afterwards, though.
I get the answer.
Should we take a break? Anybody need a break?
I could use a break.
Yeah.
I'll second that.
It is 10:07. Let's take a 10-minute break and get back here in 10 minutes.
Recording stopped.
Yeah, I'm
a little frustrated with that one.
We are now recording.
Thank you, Kurt. It's 10:19. The board is back in session, and I think we're ready to move on to item E6E1.
This call is now being recorded.
This is Dean Ray. I want to let you know that I'm here on the phone.
Great, thank you, Mr. Is it Zemet? Are you online, Kurt? You know,
I said he was going to call with, but I don't see him on there.
Okay.
Is that right, Orlean? Is it Zemet? Simon?
Yeah. This is item P22-056. The synopsis of this complaint, on March 22, 2022, the board opened a complaint alleging that respondent and respondent firm failed to comply with board order 21055. Board records show that respondent and respondent firm entered into a consent agreement with the board, which became effective on September the 20th, 2021, that included an order for respondent to pay an administrative penalty of $250 and a cost of investigation of $265 by March 21st, 2022. Respondents failed to make either of the required payments. I think board members have read through, hopefully, the background of this. Mr. Zeman apparently is having some medical difficulties and having a difficult time making a living. I guess I want to open this up for discussion. Obviously, there is a consent agreement that he agreed to, but he is having trouble fulfilling that consent agreement.
Mr. Chair?
Oh,
sure.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair. So looks like based on the time frame in here, there's some outreach back in May of this year, and then we requested for them to provide something formally in writing to, you know, kind of formally document some conditions and stuff. And based on what has been conveyed verbally, it seems like he is having some hard times in medical and this and that. So I think more discussion, but my position would be to potentially propose reaching out one more time in writing and say, hey, please provide us something back in writing, and then circle back around based on the findings of that.
And please feel free to ask Ms. Laura, because she's been trying to reach out.
And so no success so far, Ms. Laura, as far as any feedback from the individual?
I actually talked to him this morning. He said he was going to, I talked to him on Monday, he said he was going to be here in person, and then this morning he said he couldn't make it. I provided the call-in information. In the conversation that I did have, back in May, was that he just had a lot of medical issues and could not pay the fees at this time. I did ask them to provide that. He didn't provide any written formal response, and I've asked a few times.
Okay, so in addition to the May 12th and some other ancillary coordination through there?
I followed up in April. April, and then I received a voicemail from his wife indicating his medical issues. I reached out again to see if I could get a formal response, and that's when he said that he just could not pay the fees at this time. He did indicate that he didn't know why he had to pay the fees based on board order P-21-055. I did indicate that he did agree to that back in September.
Right.
So he's just, based on the verbal communication, he is not financially able to pay those two fees at this time.
Ms. Laura, the original consent agreement, which I know was before I came on the board, did that have a timeline of 30 days to complete the terms, or it would go to a hearing, or what was the... trying to recall.
He signed that consent agreement back in September and gave, I believe, 6 months to do so. He did not. He failed to pay those fees. He was given a compliance notice reminder of those fees that were being that were due, I believe, 2 weeks before that due date. I didn't hear anything, and that's when the opened a complaint for failure to comply with that board order.
I guess my perspective is that, I mean, you know, this isn't a huge amount. I'm not trying to minimize that at all, and I realize that there's medical expenses. I think that we would need to convey to Mr. Zimet that if, you know, he needs to provide some sort of a timeline, or at least respond in writing to these requests, and potentially convey to him that if not, then the board will have to take more other steps, which probably will not be any better. In fact, they'll probably be worse for him. So I don't know how best we can communicate that to him, but technically he is in violation of the consent agreement, and that obviously, you know, we have to be consistent with everyone, regardless of other factors that may be at play.
And just to clarify, any time throughout this 6 month period, has he indicated a desire to make any payment at all, a partial payment, anything?
No, my first communication was when I sent that the reminder of that payment coming up. And the first indication of his medical issues was that conversation in May.
6 months after he signed the consent agreement.
Yep.
Those medical conditions are pretty serious.
If I may, just due to HIPAA, considerations, if the board would like to, if it's agendized for executive session for discussion of that, we could. But otherwise, it's best to just refer to his medical issues.
Okay. Right. So,
sorry, did he indicate that he wished us to call him?
He just said that he would be online, but I did provide his phone number just in case the board wishes to give him a call.
Would you like me to give him a call?
Yeah, let's give him a chance to present. Mr. Donald, if we wanted to amend the consent agreement at this time, we're starting over with a new consent agreement.
The board would have a couple of options with regards to it. It would depend on what it was the board was interested in doing with it. If the board was looking at reducing or eliminating payment requirements, that is probably the one thing that could be done unilaterally for the board to find it. To modify to remove those. Otherwise,
hello, is this
at the tone? Please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Hello, Mr.
Zimet. This is Kurt Winter, Deputy Director of Arizona Board of Technical Administration. We're here at the board meeting discussing your matter, and we're just trying to give you a call to see if you would like to participate. Thank you.
Another option being an extended period of time, like 12 months.
Exactly. The board
additional could. Or something.
That's a concern. And that wouldn't necessarily be a modification of the consent agreement. The board could simply not pursue a potential violation for violation of a board order at this time and could simply pend the matter. Or alternately, again, depending upon what the board was interested in doing, the board could look at a brand new consent agreement, but that would involve
signature.
I'm sorry, Mr. Hamm.
That would require a new signature and all that. I would just say pin it for 12 months.
I guess my concern is that he's not here to attend this matter. We've tried calling. He's not answering. He's not providing the feedback that Ms. Laura has been attempting
what
to do. That's a concern
that
I have.
We can't discuss that.
No idea.
Yeah.
Well, we do, but we can't discuss it in this session without going to executive.
And honestly, I think it's not really relevant to the case what it is. It's just the fact that regardless of what it is, there's not any response back to the board after multiple outreaches. And that would be a concern that I have is why are we not getting any answer?
Yeah.
If there's a financial hardship, then if anything, he should be communicating even more, saying, hey, I've got problems, I can't do this right now, but let's figure something out. And we're not getting any responses. So that's a concern I have. That
I agree. Knowing now that there was some outreach just with this week, that changes my decision from earlier about what I would like to pursue there.
Ms. Lara?
I also would like to say that he did indicate to me that he does not agree with the consent agreement that he did sign back in September. But I did make him aware that he did agree when he signed that consent agreement.
It's too late now.
Yeah. Agreed.
Well, it seems appropriate that we make another overture to Mr. Zima to try and give us some kind of written response for your earlier request. Then let's hold this for the next month and make a decision at that time.
Yeah.
But if the board were to do that, certainly the board could simply take no action at this time and direct staff to place it on the agenda for next month.
And
if we don't get a response, then I think Mr. Kaliga is correct, Mr. Sales, that we should go ahead and maybe make a decision at that time. But let's give another 30 days to give a response on his interest to address the board.
And I would ask that staff also try to get some sort of a direction from him as to if and what he can pay and when. Because just saying I can't pay without any timeline or even a payment option, that to me is not really acting in good faith with the board, and that would be my concern.
Yeah. And maybe he'll offer a payment schedule, $50 a month or something.
Yeah, something to show progress.
To show an effort.
Do we need a motion for that, or are we just...
The board would be able to simply take no action today and request that it be placed on next month's agenda.
Okay. So there's a decision to take no action on item 6E1, and we'll come back and discuss this again and see how it responds next month. Okay, let's move on to item 6E2. And is Mr. Glancy online?
Yes, I'm online.
Great, thank you. This is case number P22-060. The synopsis of this complaint is on April 1st, the board opened a complaint alleging that respondent and respondent firm advertised the practice of engineering on their website without firm registration with the board. Board records show that respondent's firm registration with the board expired March 9th, 2020 and was closed by the board March 28th, 2022. Mr. Clancy, apparently you're not currently practicing structural civil. Can you share with the board your position on this complaint and your status?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. I'd be happy to. I retired from the city of Phoenix. I'm a structural engineer and a civil engineer, but I retired from the city of Phoenix in 2017. Opened up a consulting business in 2018 to do management consulting, purely management consulting. I help government agencies streamline processes, improve customer service, things like that. So I created a website. Nowhere on the website does it say anything about practicing engineering, offering to practice engineering. Never has. It's the same website since the day it was put up. But in 2019, a friend asked me, a really good friend, asked me if I would do a foundation for his garage. So I said, yeah, I'll do your foundation for you for free. Didn't charge anything for it. But because I was going to do that, I went ahead and registered my firm, so I would follow all the rules. Registered as an engineering firm. Did his foundation and have never done another project since. Anytime anybody calls me that knows me from my previous days as an engineer, I tell them, I don't want to do that anymore. I just do management consulting. So I didn't renew it the following year. So, the only reason I registered as a firm was to do that project for a friend, and I did the one project, and that was it. So I didn't really think I needed to be registered as an engineering firm since I don't offer that.
Okay. All right. Thank you for sharing that. I did review your website, and I agree. I didn't see anything on there that advertised your ability to provide the service of a structural or civil. So I don't have any concerns here. I want to open this up for discussion with the board. Anybody
want to concerns?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, looking at the documents provided on the website, the bio indicates civil engineering and structural engineering experience, but looking at the scopes of what they offer and everything, I come to the same conclusion you have. It doesn't offer engineering anywhere in the scope.
Okay. I don't see a lot to pursue here, so I think we could probably take a motion to dismiss this case.
I'll make a motion. I'll move to dismiss 6E2, P22060.
This is Mike Kalika. I'll second that.
Great. We have a motion and a second to dismiss this case. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Langren? Ms. Langren? Okay. Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Okay.
Sorry. This is Colleen Langren. Was on mute. I vote aye.
Great. Okay, we have a unanimous vote to dismiss this case. Mr. Clancy, thanks for calling in. And appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, moving on, item 7A1. We have Deanie Ray. Ms. Ray?
6F1 still, check.
Oh, I'm sorry. This item 6F1, case number P22038. The synopsis of the complaint: on November 16, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that on or about September 29, 2021, after contracting with a client and being paid $1,200 for mechanical design plans for a home remodel project at 15849 North 37th Street, Phoenix, respondent failed to deliver completed plans and has failed to respond to all contact attempts. It is further alleged that on or about September 29, 2021, the respondent firm engaged in the practice of engineering without firm registration and with the board. Board records show no indication the respondent firm has never been registered or ever been registered with the board. We don't have anybody calling in on this, Kurt. This has been a difficult case. Ms. Lyric, can you give us a quick summary?
Yeah. So I have attempted to contact the respondent since November. I've attempted 3 to 4 different addresses, emails, phone numbers, certified mail, and I have not received a response from him. I contacted the alleger, no contact since November of 2021. Um, I don't know where he is.
Okay.
The ledger?
The respondent.
Okay.
And we know he's still registered with the board as...
His mechanical PE expires in September of this year.
Same with firm registration?
That firm has never been registered with us.
Oh, that's right. That's okay. Wow.
Postpone it until September?
No, I don't know if there's any benefit. I think we can go right to formal hearing.
I agree.
We've made every overture to communicate with this guy and let him address why he didn't perform. And now he's not communicating with staff at all. So I think we make recommendation.
There is a comment in the ledger says that they think that he might be dead. Can we check records to see if that's true?
I have...
no indication.
Looked to see if there's an obituary anywhere, and I have not.
Okay.
Interesting.
Mr. Chair, I would make a motion to forward this case to a formal hearing, agenda item 6F1.
Okay, we have a motion.
Mr. Chair, if I may, just one point. In forwarding this to a hearing, could the board please just be sure to enunciate the specific act or acts that constitute the violations, so it's clearer for the attorney taking the court case to hear.
I'll happily amend my motion. So I would make a motion to forward agenda item 6F1 based on the respondent may have engaged in gross negligence as defined by AAC R4-30-101-13 while providing professional service to the public in possible violation of ARS 32-128C2. And also that the respondent's firm may have practiced or offered to practice a board-regulated profession without firm registration in possible violation of ARS 32-121, 141, and 32-128C4.
I hate to do
can we do that again?
and if the board could explain the gross negligence, the act that constitutes gross negligence.
Of course. Related to the respondent having been paid for professional services and failing to complete plans and failed to respond to all contact attempts both by the board and by the alleger.
Thank you.
Perfect. Good job.
Mr. Chair, I second that motion.
Great. We have a motion and a second. Thank you, Mr. Sales. All those in favor of... moving us forward to hearing for Mr. Kalika's motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
And Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote, Kurt. Thank you. All right. Now we move on to... item 7A1. We have Dini Ray is online.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Our IA, Seth Hargraves, is also present.
Ah, thank you. Ms. Ray, do you want to start with this or this?
Okay, this one is.
Legacy Inspection Group?
Mr. Austin, okay. All right, so. Mr. Austin, I'm trying to pull up the consent agreement, I'm sorry. This is the home inspector. Mr. Austin is the home inspector. And the original allegation was that he did not complete an inspection correctly by not noting a water leak or some water leakage. That actually, in conferring with the investigator on this case, that allegation could not be maintained. But there were also, as a result of an EAC and, you know, evaluation of the case, there were a lot of technical allegations that he violated some sort of technical allegations regarding reporting
Those are all listed in the consent agreement under findings of fact 7A through J. But I should also note that the respondent has corrected his reporting software to correct those reporting errors, or at least he indicated that he has done so. So in my estimation, this is somewhat of a technical case, and one of the things that the respondent mentioned or complained about, if you want to call it that, is that there's not a whole lot of training and communication about what needs to be done. So we designed this consent agreement to allow him to do a peer review to get that education. One of the things that he was not aware of, whether he should have been or not, was that his firm needed to be registered. So that is taken into account in the consent agreement as well, where he's required to make sure that he gets his registration and his for himself and his home inspection firm. He needs to obtain those and continue to maintain them. With regard to the administrative penalty, this was designed to give him a break as long as he complies with the other conditions of the consent agreement. But if he doesn't, then a different fine is imposed. So if he complies with the conditions of the consent agreement, his fine would be $250. And if he fails to comply, that fine then gets raised to $1,000. And so that is my recommendation, that this is an appropriate resolution for this particular case.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from the board? So, Ms. Ray, your recommendation is we avoid the hearing and go and offer the consent agreement as presented?
Yeah, my recommendation is that you approve the consent agreement, sign it, and then order me to vacate the hearing, which is set at OA. It was continued to allow you to make the decision one way or the other, and I have to file something with OA, either vacating the hearing or, you know, resetting the hearing.
Okay. Thank you. Any discussion by the board?
Looks like he's already signed the consent agreement on the 6th of June.
So it's board approval.
Mm-hmm. So we need to make a motion to vacate as well as accept the consent agreement?
You need to decide whether or not to accept. I'm sorry, Seth is on the line.
Sorry.
Yes, if the board, sorry, this is Seth Hargreaves, independent advisor. If the board is amenable to accepting the consent agreement, I'd recommend that the board vote to approve that in either part of that motion or as a separate motion, move to vacate the hearing.
Yeah. Okay. Can I get a board member to make a motion, please?
Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I propose a motion to approve the signed consent agreement and vacate the hearing.
Very good. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Eck. All those in favor of vacating the hearing and accepting the signed consent agreement, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Ms. Langren?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Rubick?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote, Kurt. Thank you, Ms. Ray and Mr. Hargreaves. We got one more, but that just takes care of the first one.
Actually, I have two more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Thank you, Deanie.
Okay, let's move on to the second. This involves Mr. Flanagan. Ms. Ray?
Okay. So Mr. Flanagan was charged with offering to conduct an alarm business. without registration. And the story behind this is that Mr. Flanagan, the person who was doing these alarm business for him, left his employ, and he no longer conducted alarm business as part of his firm, but he forgot to take that off of his website. So he has not been conducting any alarm business. The only violation is that he just had on his website the offer to do so, which he's since corrected. So in this particular consent agreement, what we have proposed is that he pay the cost of investigation and the administrative penalty, which is the cost of investigation is $363. The administrative penalty is $250. He has signed that, and I recommend that you approve it and then vacate the hearing, at the OWA hearing.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Ray. Mr. Hargraves, we'll just use the same motion as our previous one.
If that's what the board's action is, then yes.
Okay. Board.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to accept for agenda item 7A2, the signed consent agreement, which looks like was signed by Mr. Flanagan on the 22nd of June, so last week, in lieu of a formal hearing.
And to vacate the hearing.
And accept the signed consent agreement.
Okay, we have a motion.
I second.
Mr. Hack, thank you. There's a motion to accept the signed consent agreement and vacate the hearing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Danke?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Thank you. I think we have a unanimous vote, Kurt. Okay, let's move on to 7B1. Does this involve Ms. Ray?
Yes, it does. This was a case that was assigned to me, and the board canceled his registration, therefore the board has lost jurisdiction, so we're asking that you administratively close this case.
Okay. That's the only motion we need to take care of, just administratively close this case?
That's my understanding.
That's the only action required, okay.
Kurt Winter, Deputy Director, just a question to Seth. No complaint notice of hearing has been sent, and I don't believe any hearing has been created with OWA and the docket number. There is no hearing to vacate. Is that correct, Seth?
I can answer. That's correct.
I would defer to Ms. Ray.
There has been no complaint or notice of hearing filed, and there is no OWA hearing.
Thank you.
So really, then, it's just a motion to administratively close.
Okay. We get a motion to that effect.
I make a motion we administratively close agenda item 7B1.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I second.
We have a motion and a second to administratively close item 7B1, HI-21023. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Danke?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Thank you. We have another unanimous vote, Kurt. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Ms. Ray, Mr. Hargraves.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll be leaving. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. That completes our enforcement items. Moving on to some of the fun stuff. Item 8B. Judith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, the date has finally arrived. This Thursday, June 30th, is our court date at the Supreme Court to hear oral arguments or have oral arguments heard at 9 a.m. We have prepared a notice to post just stating that a quorum may be present, but no board business would be conducted. just in the event we actually had a quorum of board members turn out, you are welcome to come in person. I've been told there's no limit on people there, but you can also live stream it or watch the video later. And if you would like the link, just email Kurt or Hayden and we'll send that to you. Or maybe we could just do our blind copy. We'll just send it to you.
Yeah.
So you have it. Yeah. We'll just send it. Better idea.
What Great. Day is that again, June?
This Thursday, June 30th at 9 a.m. And I don't know when we'll hear back. You know, we'll have a final from that. It'll probably be a few months, but I don't know. But as soon as we know anything, then we will schedule to have our legal counsel come in and give us a full update on that.
Great.
And that's really all I have on that item. If you want to move on to item 8B.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not really sure where to even start on this one. Kurt, you'd probably be more concise. on how we got started down this one.
Basically, what this came from was a complaint against a home inspector. Someone was asking for their financial assurance, which is a statutory requirement for home inspectors. They provide, or to us, a copy of their financial assurance, either a bond or E&O policy. Our statute is very explicit about E&O. And from that complaint, we decided to do an audit of all of our financial assurance for home inspectors and found that some insurance did not list E&O, and so we have been reaching out to these home inspectors to ask for either an updated insurance policy that lists E&O, or at least an email or some kind of correspondence from the provider that specifies that E&O is the same as, for instance, professional liability insurance, if that's what they have on their declaration page. Some are reaching out to these companies. Some are, sure, we can do that, easy peasy. Others are like, no, they laugh at us. They tell us it's the same thing. That's pretty obvious. It's general knowledge, but our statute says E&O, so we're trying to work with them to get that language. So a substantive policy statement, for those who don't know, is basically kind of like an opinion of the board. It's not statute. It's not law. The subsequent board may not have to follow it whatsoever, but it's something that kind of indicates to the public that this is what the board's kind of doing right now. And so we were creating some language just to make things easier for our home inspectors as well as meet their statutory requirements for financial assurance. If they were to provide us with professional liability insurance, that in fact would meet our statutory requirements because it is equal to E&O insurance and provides the same protection to the inspector as well as the public. We have been pretty successful actually at getting people to put the E&O on it. So this may not even be required, but we wanted to present it to you anyway.
And it's just an idea, because I have to say I'm not a huge fan of adding a policy statement to this, but we're just, Kurt's like, thanks, after all, work for you. But it's just been fascinating, this whole experience of trying to just make sure everybody's in compliance with our, you know, statutory requirement on this. Like Kurt said, it was just unbelievable. Some of the insurance agents, which we continue to remind the home inspectors, just, you know, remember, these insurance agents are working for you. They work for you. They should be willing to help you. And when Kurt said, you know, we'd like to see it on the declaration page, well, some of these documents are in excess of 100 pages. So, you know, we have one member of staff yelled at multiple times by a few different people because she couldn't find on page 82 or 78, paragraph B, the one place in the document that was over 100 pages that mentioned E&O, you know, on this professional liability document. So yeah, even if at the very least, if the insurance agent would provide an email with referencing the policy number, saying it does meet this requirement, just anything like that, we really just wanted to bring it to your attention, let you know what we were doing. I mean, an audit is always a good thing to make sure everything is as it should be. And sometimes it takes something going south or a complaint or something to bring something to your attention that you weren't aware of, that you thought was
wrong. When these guys when they re-up their license, can we add something on the form that says they do or do not have you know, and has this been some checkoff? So you guys aren't in the position of having to go through. This shouldn't be your problem to deal with.
It's kind of like what they say. If you had any disciplinary action against you in the last renewal cycle, could we potentially add that? I don't know if that's a... Well,
there's a statutory requirement that they have to provide an FA with their renewals. We do keep a track of the FAs within our database with expiration dates, things of that nature. We send out notices, hey, you're coming up on expiration. Hey, you've passed it. You're now suspended. You're going to be revoked in so many amount of days. If you don't give it to us, you've been revoked. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's the, one of the only ways the board can administratively revoke someone's license is the failure of the financial assurance. We take it, it's very serious, and we give them tons of notice regarding it. With this...
But how do you know they've got actual E&O versus...
Well, it's looked at.
It's looked at.
Each policy's looked at
you guys?
When it comes in.
Okay.
And I'm also looking at it from the perspective of when we get audited, you know, in another year or so, we go through that process, and I can promise you that the auditors will go through everything that we have and want to know if it meets our statutory, you know, if it's compliant. And
okay.
And I just think if there's policies in there where it's not clear, they're going to point right to statute. Whether or not it's accepted in the industry that it says professional liability and professional liability includes errors and omissions, then maybe we just need to look at a change in statute to clarify that or something. Professional liability, that, you know, whatever. But we are policy holders. Don't they have to list us on the policy? Or?
Correct. The,
yeah.
The bonds and the policy have us. So if they are ever canceled, we do receive notice that it's been canceled.
So everyone is reviewed as it comes in.
Okay.
With their renewals.
Good.
That's why it would be really helpful if they would just put it on the declaration page so you don't have to go hunting for it.
So I guess with this particular matter is, do we want a policy statement out there? And it kind of, I don't know, Scott, Jude, if you guys can have your opinions about that.
We're all very opinionated.
I'm a little limited in the opinions I can give simply because I can't offer the board any blanket statement that a professional liability insurance policy will be the equivalent of an errors and omissions insurance policy. I simply can't state that the one is always going to be the other.
Besides the insurance company.
Well, the insurance company could tell you that it's errors and omissions insurance. The statute requires the board to have the applicant, if they're providing this policy as proof of their financial assurance, it needs to be an errors and omissions insurance policy. So it is incumbent upon the applicant to provide evidence of having a policy that meets the standard. If it doesn't specify that, any board staff are not insurance agents, and I don't practice in the insurance realm, and even if I did, I couldn't say that 3 weeks from now, you know, a blanket statement, this will still meet the requirements of E&O. So it really is up to the board to determine whether or not a policy is an E&O policy. As to whether a blanket policy like this, professional liability insurance policy, will meet the board, the state's requirement of E&O, I can't say.
If you're not comfortable with having a general thing like that, you could just say, just pursue how we have been doing it and contacting the home inspectors and asking for that E&O and asking them to contact their agents and to get that updated language. We have been fairly successful with that, so we, again, just wanted to present this to you.
Yeah, I don't think it's something that necessarily needs a motion even. It's just that we really wanted to bring it to your attention and make you aware of what was going on.
Yeah, I think it's important just to make your life easier that when you send out these renewals, they are reminded they have to provide E&O. And if it's general liability, they still have to qualify it somehow per ARS statute.
Right.
I'd like to get you guys out of the hook of
right.
being responsible for that.
Yeah, just
put that back on
the statute
applicant.
And leave it at that. You know, let them.
I mean, we definitely try. I mean, we quote statute and rule everywhere all the time because we want people to know this is required. We're not just pulling these things out of the air. No.
good Googling for just the ARS numbers and those type of things. I mean, it's, I don't want to go dive down and add some other text that's already out there somewhere that they got to do it to begin with.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, they're professionals and they need to be responsible for all the jurisdictional matters that affect them, including this. So if they have a question, copy and paste the ARS into Google and it'll take you right to it. So
did we address this appropriately? Are you going to issue some kind of a substantive policy?
You don't have to. We had created it, but it's not necessarily needed. We wanted to give you guys the option just so we wanted to.
Yeah, it's been brought to your attention. They will continue doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
No action needed.
Okay.
Just move on.
Okay.
Thank you for hearing us out.
We are empathetic.
Thank you. And then 8C, review of the mass email for home inspectors. So this, I mean, just look at our board meeting today. I mean, look at Julie's face. Look at all. Parallel inspections are a difficult thing. They shouldn't be a difficult thing, but it has been. And we do look at the inspections and we do look at the parallel inspections. And Julie and Kurt and I have sat through hours of home inspector rule committee, what is it, HIRs? Rules and Standards Committee.
The last one was particularly entertaining.
So. And God, yes, Mike joined us for part of the last meeting. And I just continue to struggle with parallel inspections on so many levels. And one is just, as you, again, consider what we heard today, even, what is the purpose of these parallel inspections when someone's getting certified as a home inspector? I mean, to me, the purpose of that is to have them come out of their training, educated with a variety of experience of parallels that meet the requirements of law, at least as a bare minimum, so that they know what they're doing, to a degree at least, when they're certified. So, Julie's licensing staff have received such a variety of parallels that aren't qualified to be parallels. And you even heard today, we go to this commercial building or whatever. I mean, that doesn't constitute a parallel inspection. And then also we finally, with the rules, the home inspector rules, and is it again, Rules and Standards Committee, established, well, it was already established, but I guess clarified for us that any unit that's, how does it read in our, more than residential building of 4 units or less, is what they can count as a parallel inspection. Because that had kind of become a problem as well, Julie.
Right, yeah, there was some confusion about what's acceptable. So applicants were submitting like apartment inspections, condos, or being sold as condos, but they're actually apartments. And so there was some back and forth conversations about what is acceptable, or the guest houses, in the back of a home.
A
lot of back and forth about what constitutes.
And those kind of things are really completely well defined. And I brought up to the committee, I said, well, this is just, my opinion. To me, if a home inspector in training is, it's not that I don't want somebody purchasing a condo or somebody that wants their apartment inspected or something like that. I mean, anybody can do that. They can inspect whatever they want. But for the criterion of parallel inspections, I think if somebody is going to a 500 unit complex and doing 30 condos,
they're all the same.
They're all the same.
There's not a variety of experience was the concern.
A lot of elements that you'd be looking at in a detached home, foundations, attics, things, I don't know.
Trailer.
Well, this guy we had today, he was talking about there were a variety of software programs available as the formatting for these inspection reports. Are they similar? Are they identical, or just different presentations?
I think that's part of the problem, and maybe Doug, any investigators want to jump in on this? I mean, as the complaints come in with the home inspectors, I think that that is part of the problem, is the variety of software that's out there for them to use and meeting the points that have to be met, but not, I don't know. Do you guys want to add anything in your experience?
One of them include boiler points as opposed to extended narrative on the 84 points.
Some of the software.
So for instance, yeah.
Sorry.
Of course. So for instance, they'd have a defined term of inspected at the front page as, you know, meets criteria, is acceptable, and then everywhere there's not really an issue, they just write inspected. That's generally been taken as minimum standard, but it has caused a bit of a hiccup because it requires a lot of back and forth, and a lot of these programs use those boiler points. And I think it's to save time, but it has caused some issue because it's easier to read an actual narrative from the inspector as opposed to using defined terms going back and forth. And it seems like a lot of these programs rely on that a lot.
You know, I can see some advantages to the format, though, the checklist, only because when you read through the standard practice, that pages and pages, a little fine print of all the things they got to look at.
Right.
And at least with the format, some homeowner, buyer, is going to look, oh, here's all the stuff they got to look at. There's some confidence, I would think, that the report's fairly thorough. And if it's not, then it should be easily identified as not being thorough. So I guess I'm talking in circles here, but it seems like with all the problems we have with these home inspectors, you guys are not having a chance to review consistent formats, and I don't know how to get around that.
Yeah, a lot of these programs, as far as I know, there aren't any that are specific to Arizona standards.
That's
so they're generalized countrywide.
Right.
The responsibility is still on the inspector. They can format it and they can add in their own narratives and whatnot. But if they go strictly by the checkoff list with these systems, they will miss many of our points because they're not specific to our standards.
So is this a rules committee thing?
It's
kind of bring it to your attention.
It's a big discussion. I mean, I felt like I didn't get very far in the rules committee as I was trying to bring up my concerns. So I think that it'll definitely get revisited again, and I really appreciate Mike being involved on that part of the discussion.
There's a lot of passion in that conversation on that particular agenda item, and you know, both Judith and I kind of shared the same concerns, but you know, they basically kind of felt like, no, we've got enough experience here so that folks can get what they need from their 30 parallel inspections. So you know, we tried to kind of bring that up and push that item, and they were kind of like, nope, it's covered already. So,
and anytime something's come up to Julie or her staff with a parallel inspection where they had a question, does this really count? We're not sure. Like for instance, the casita that's on the same property or something like that, and they're concerned, does this meet parallel? And you know what? I say if we're unclear on it, then we'll be happy to take that to the board, and then usually they just produce another one. And so it hasn't come here yet, but I said if it's not well defined, if we're not sure, it, you know, the same address to me, it doesn't feel like it is right, then I'm going to bring it to the board for you guys to decide. So
any chance we can move these home inspectors over to the Department of Real Estate?
Our agenda would get a lot shorter.
I mean, that's
not
agenda.
Yeah, actually, register of contractors is where it should be.
They are working. I think that they're nearing the end. Kurt, would you, I hope, agree on that? That we have the next meeting is in September. They are almost done reviewing the standards of practice to take back to AZ ASHI for approval to be adopted, so we can bring that in addition to some accompanying rule changes that go along with that, that Kurt and Hayden and I and Julie all have been working on, we'll bring back to the board for your approval to ask permission to go to the governor's office and open a rule package to accept the updated standards and also make a few cleanup rule changes. And so we can have further discussion on some of the parallels. Maybe food for thought. You guys can think about it a little bit and look at our rules and ask yourself, you know, are we protecting the public or health, safety, and welfare of the public?
So the committee is satisfied with 30 parallel inspections for new applicants?
They are, and it wasn't the number that makes me uneasy. It's what constitutes those 30, you know, so that the person is kind of well versed and having a little bit of a variety versus, I don't know.
What we experienced today.
Yeah. Right.
Well,
like you mentioned, 30 apartment buildings of the same.
Yeah, they're identical.
So just, maybe we could talk about that some more in depth, because it will be coming back to the board. I mean, I hope this fall at the latest. So
this e-blast here, this is that was in there, is that what we're talking about being proposed
send
out?
Circle back around. So we wanted to send this out just, I guess, to clarify, because we had been accepting some parallels in residential buildings that potentially had more than 4 units. So we just want to make that crystal clear, send out that email blast to everybody and make sure that,
just a friendly reminder there, because I don't see anything in here that's anything. We're just mentioning, go look at this code and this code. And so it's not I remember there are a couple of reminders for when you did the PE seal with putting the dates underneath. There were a couple of friendly reminders. Don't forget, put your date underneath there.
Right.
Just to remind everybody to do it. My question is, there's a couple bolded words in there. And my experience is that.
I just wanted to be very clear.
Because
I anticipate some pushback with this. I think there's just confusion about, I think, what home inspectors are seeing as, home inspections. They're getting paid to do an inspection of a commercial building, an apartment, and then they believe that should also count as a parallel inspection. Why not, right? I'll bring a candidate out with me and do an inspection that I'm already doing, but this, I just wanted to be very clear that it's home inspection for the purpose of parallel would be this home inspection with the residential building of 4 units.
Okay. I'd like to. I mean, I'd probably defer a little bit to the legal counsel there. My experience is you bold something, that means it's more important than all the other words that are in there. And so, if that's okay,
then we can take the bold out.
We'll replace it with underlined. So.
Make it red.
Yeah. Flashing.
I'll defer to the legal agenda.
I'm comfortable with it. However, the board would like to send it out.
Okay.
How diplomatic.
I don't have an issue with the bolding. I think, when I look at this, my goes to home inspection, residential building of 4 units or less, right? And that's basically what you're trying to convey, Julie. So
exactly.
I think it makes sense. We're not changing policy with this. We're just reminding them, hey, this is what the rules are.
I mean, the people that are, they're paying for these parallel inspections. They're paying for this training. And
it's to their best interest to get a variety of inspection experience so that they're a more well-rounded inspector at the end of the day.
And actually go through the motions of the entire inspection each time.
So there's a classroom setting, right, that home inspectors have to go through, mm-hmm. but not related to parallel, right?
Right, you can go through the coursework, but then the parallel inspections are
still separate.
Hands-on, yeah, separate.
So what I'm saying, what I'm saying is the classroom in that does not have examples, pictures of what would be experienced in a parallel.
I couldn't say I haven't taken a course.
I think someone here needs to take a class.
I agree.
Or we get a home inspector on the board.
I actually have asked all of our investigators to take a course, various courses.
I think someone needs to do it, a dual.
I see where you're trending.
Okay, so we're off topic.
Yeah, put me on before they put me on that.
Well, I just think it's kind of dead lane. It's not really going to go very far. You'll be in here months and months afterwards still talking about it. Because there is a problem out there.
So So we need to do a motion for C? Or
no, we're just going to send that friendly reminder out.
Okay.
Please do.
Unless you wanted to amend that friendly reminder.
No.
Okay. No. All right. Should we move on to the director's report?
Please.
Okay. Well, it's unless something's happened while we're in this meeting, we're still waiting for the budget to be signed. But but it did pass, and so it will go into effect. And that's great. We're excited about that because last year, I remember on June 30th, we were all looking at each other, wondering if we should come into work the next day or not. The budget passed till the very, very end of the day. So that's a good thing. The current financials here that I have for you show that we're in good shape. And I also have other financial reports that include projections. This has been kind of a unique year with the budget. Normally, I think there would have been more of a surplus in our appropriated funds, but as you know, that the document digitization, that ended up taking a good $50,000 more than we were appropriated for. So, you know, you put in those justifications on a budget package so far ahead of time. I mean, you get quotes, of course, and you anticipate what you think it'll be, and then, you know, it just ended up being more than that. And I would say we're done. We're kind of done, but ICM Document Solutions, their microfiche equipment, has just crashed and burned multiple times, and they, you know, with all the supply chain issues and everything, they can't get their new equipment into place, and so we haven't been able to close out that. We do have funds encumbered for that, and we have asked permission from the General Accounting Office to please allow us to use funds from this fiscal year, because we have them this fiscal year, even into the next fiscal year when ICM gets the updated equipment and can finish the microfiche scanning. We've also put in a request. Well, another big expense too was the boardroom changes. And again, last year when I submitted the budget, at that time, our thought, Kurt and I had done research on sound equipment that we could move on a cart, because we had no idea that the General Services Division was going to come back and do what they did. I mean, that was not on the table. Nobody had said a word. The only thing that we knew is that we could use this building, the shared room, but nobody was going to help us with technology or sound equipment or anything. And so the best we could do would be have a giant rolling cart and drag in all the mics and whatever equipment we were going to use. So we had put in a budget ask for that. And then you know, the whole world just got turned upside down. And they're like, hey, guess what? Pharmacy's coming in, clean elections. We're going to bump this wall out, demo half the second floor, and I sure hope you have some funds, because, you know, so we are splitting the costs with pharmacy and clean elections, and that was wonderful. And it's going to be great, and we're going to have technology, but again, so I don't know what else to say besides supply chain issues. So we've put in a request for that. All of the audio equipment that's not going to come until, what, Kurt, later this fall, if we're lucky?
Maybe.
To, again, be brought out of this fiscal budget. Because I hate to, you know, when we have the funds encumbered from this fiscal budget to use things in the next fiscal budget that you have plans for already. So we did get approval for the audio equipment. We haven't received approval quite yet to finish the document scanning, but hopefully that will come through.
Sure, historically, the BTR has made actually money for the state. I mean, we are surplus cash revenue. Do they allow you any discretion on holding on to some slush funds?
Absolutely not.
Well, donuts, I mean, those are expensive.
Well, Bill's in charge of donuts.
You know, consulting firm.
But it seems like with equipment, audio, all the stuff that you guys have to deal with, they would allow you to hold on to, as long as you can justify the expense. They don't allow you to hold on to any of that?
Well, you have to ask permission. If you have the funds, and you know, like I'd like to do, so I have the encumbered funds for this fiscal year, And so we just have to ask permission to please use the funds, because there's funds in our cash balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's our appropriated funds that you know, passes in the budget that we're allowed to use for specific things. And yeah, as a reminder, 90-10 means 10% of all of our revenue goes directly into the general fund. We don't take any monies from the general fund. We just put monies in for existing and still pay rent and everything.
Right.
We've also, yeah, I mean, it's, I guess, part of the director's report, so I could say, I mean, part of the budget too has also been salary considerations. Had kind of been like a revolving door in our agency, and you can't fault people for wanting to take opportunities to have promotions and things like that. So we're trying to hang on to people a little bit longer. So let's see, budget, online transition. We are still working with Asset and SPO, the State Procurement Office. We just got emailed again this morning to, they really want us to sign that contract for the online transition. I keep telling them we can't sign it until we know the budget is in place and we have the funds. And Kurt has started work on the PIDGE project. PIDGE is Project Investment Justification that has to go through when you're looking at a project of that size. And obviously we'll need ongoing funding for that. But that is definitely a priority of the governor's office to be digital. And it will be just a tremendous advantage for all of the registrants, the public, everybody, to have that in place. So still working on that. Hopefully the budget will go through, we'll sign that contract and start in July on that.
Okay.
Our board website got a facelift. I don't know how many of you noticed that. It's pretty exciting. We had a few hiccups in the beginning with some of the searches, but those were resolved. Aiden, everybody, Julie, everybody's been helpful in checking the website to make sure that the functionality is what it needs to be. And we have received a lot of positive feedback. Have you received feedback too, Julie?
Yeah,
that's it. Doug, have you heard from anybody?
Not too much.
Not too much.
It's very proud of the Arizona flag there 3 times. Just looking at it right now. When did that happen?
Probably right after the last board meeting,
okay.
I guess, because
okay.
They were working on it, but they flipped the switch, so to speak.
Yeah.
Board staff. So back to board staff. So we have Caitlin Crawford there sitting in the corner. She's a new investigator with our enforcement team. Very excited about that. And, he'll probably be mad at me for saying it, but Doug Parlin's retiring.
Man.
The legend is retiring. So that's pretty big news for us, because Doug has been here for 80
Don't tell my wife.
Years.
Say what? 80?
Eight?
Wow.
Feels like 80. So he's got big plans for retirement. So we can't be too
just silly. Plans.
I already guilted him into staying an awful lot longer than he probably planned to in the first place. So we're grateful he stayed as long as he could.
Well, congratulations, Doug.
Well, it's been a pleasure serving this board.
Good.
Thank you.
We have a new licensing specialist, LaTanya Leakes. She is just the nicest person you could ever imagine meeting. So feel free to come by and say hi anytime to any of our staff. And we have been interviewing for so many positions. I think there's still 3 vacant positions. I feel like we can talk about it now because it's official. I mean, another board staff position that is officially posted is for a part-time home inspector. So the criteria for that is that they are active or have been active. They'll have to be we're looking for somebody retired or close to retired, recently retired, so they're not, we don't have a conflict of interest, so they're active. No, that's been a home inspector.
Sorry, Doug. I was thinking about you, buddy.
Don't blame him.
So, somebody that can help, because it's, it, you know, again, the statistics between, well, between the demand for parallel inspection reviews and the amount of home inspector complaints that come in and need initial assessments, our thought process to try to relieve some of that was to create this position, somebody who has a great deal of experience, who's not actively practicing as a home inspector, that could help review and assess the complaints that come in and also the parallel inspections. So we crunched numbers on about how many hours that would be, and it really is really more of a quarter-time position, and it's obviously going to be somebody remote. They don't even have to come in to the office because everything can be done electronically. And that on top of having the home inspectors attend a course as well, just to help have them have a better foundational knowledge. We'll probably put all of that into place, and then real estate board will take the home inspectors or something. I'm not going to hold my breath on that. So we're just going to do our best to keep things moving and not have any delays. Okay, I think that's all for staff. Board composition. So we still have a public member vacancy, and Mr. Hack, his position is expired, and he's tendered his resignation, so this is his last meeting. So his plaque is on order. We can't even keep up with the plaques. Yeah. We just barely got Stephen Noel's in here.
You retiring too?
I've actually been somewhat retired.
All right.
I'll be spending more time up north.
As soon as I received notification of that, I reached out to boards and commissions. What can I do to help? You know, I've reached out to the Arizona Professional Land Surveyor Association, asked them to send a letter again, please, to the governor's office with some recommendations. I think that the boards and commissions really appreciates getting letters from the associations. So all I can do is just keep reaching out and trying and talking to anybody and everybody that I know that has connections or get people to apply. So yeah. Hopefully they'll choose someone.
Judith, since we're going to have two vacancies, that takes us down to 9 active board members. And I'm trying to recall, is our quorum based on the standing number of 11, or would it be based on it?
Yes, so 6.
So if you got 9, you got to have 2/3 attending every meeting.
6 is our quorum always, right. And when I first came to the board, we were lucky to have 6 every meeting, and several meetings just ended very abruptly because somebody had to leave. So that public member position, board members, anybody you know, hey, Doug could come back with you.
There is a
look
how much you know, Doug.
I don't know.
Doug's like, out the door.
There has been a replacement for me, right?
No.
Yeah.
Well, waiting for vacancies and open positions is a lengthy thing.
I never know anything until a letter lands on my desk.
Right.
So I just ask how I can help. What can I do?
Afterwards, wife looked at it and said you should have added this sentence to it, but it's too late now.
Should have added what?
Should have added another sentence. You know, I was going to say the 6:30, but you know, until you find someone, but I didn't put that in.
Well, tell your land surveyor friends to apply.
Well, I actually spoke, they had a meeting. Mike Fondren, I'd already announced to him. I was thinking maybe he would put his name in or had his name in. Or
I think Mike's name has been in for years.
But I thought they would have already done something by now.
So we'll see. I don't have any control over it. So. Yeah. Let's see.
I had a question. This is Stacy Skanky.
Oh, Stacy.
I just
because I think my term's expiring and I applied again, but I haven't heard. So do I just keep on coming until I'm told otherwise?
You can.
That might last for a couple of years, but that's fine.
Did for Stephen, yeah.
Yeah, if you, I mean...
Actually, it could last 14 years.
You do have to apply again if your intent is to stay, and I don't know how to answer that, because the governor's office you may not hear, but they'll just let you sit. I mean, Mr. Noel, that was just replaced by Mr. Nesgood recently, his position expired in 14? Or 17.
Wow.
He expired in 2017 and was just kind enough to stay
as
a geologist because we didn't have one. So until you're officially replaced by the governor's office or you resign, one or the other, you can stay serving in your position.
Okay. Did she send an email indicating that she's reapplied so we can help?
That's true. if you have reapplied, if you're, and actually, Jack, I think. Well,
my term's up.
Right, Jack can't reapply. So yeah, you're right. But Stacy, if you have reapplied, or when you do reapply, if you would email me, that would be great. as long as I know what's going on, it helps me when I reach out to boards and commissions to follow up.
Yeah. No, my application is in. I did it earlier this month.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you for letting me know. Okay, any other questions on board composition or anything else in the report? No? If not, I think we can move on to number 10, which, Mr. Chair, if that's okay, due to a little hiccup there, if we could wait. I think that Mr. Noel will come back next month.
Great. Yeah, he needs to take some verbal abuse from him. I think that's awesome. Great.
Okay. Scott, did you have anything?
No.
Number 12, standing committee reports. So we have not had a legislative and rule committee, no L&R meeting. If there's ever anything specifically, board members, that you want brought up at that meeting, we can schedule a meeting and go over that. But we haven't had anything recently. And then our Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee. So we kind of already touched base on that, everything basically that's happening there. So again, hoping that they will get their updated standards of practice approved and adopted by Arizona ASHI so they can come back and say those are all good to go. We'll tie it up with our suggested rule changes, bring that to the board for approval. Anything else, Kurt, on that you want to add?
Well, next meeting is in September, where hopefully we'll have AZ ASHI to give us their opinion and hopefully proceed.
And hopefully there won't be more changes to delay it again.
I think they're done.
We thought that before, though. Oh, okay. All right. So this is my favorite part of the meeting, the association update. So starting with ASBOG for geology, I don't have any current update of all of the association meetings. ASBOG is the one that's latest in the year. Julie, any updates on the testing? It's all going well. Nothing changed since last meeting. Okay, and CLARB for our landscape architects?
Yeah, there was a CLARB session yesterday. Yesterday. the states who were present were all discussing the impact of COVID on licensure, because you've got to have a certain amount of experience working allegedly under another licensed landscape architect. And because of COVID, everybody's working remote, what qualifies? So that generated a lot of discussion. So the CLARB's trying to give that some better definition, how they're going to monitor and control that. That was really the bulk of that discussion. It lasted about an hour. And there's another one tomorrow in preparation for the annual conference coming up in September, I think. So that still deals with qualifications for anyone who wants to sit for the exam, and education, experience requirements, and variation among states. So they're trying to come up with a uniform standard for testing. I don't know if it's going to affect what we do here in the state, because it's legislative action, which we can't really resolve, but they're trying to come up with some standard definition of how they can impress upon new graduates the process.
Right. And Julie is going to attend that as well, since it's a licensure summit.
Oh, is that things tomorrow?
It is tomorrow at noon. I was just checking the calendar real quick. So more to come on CLARB as that meeting day gets sooner. Jack and I are both planning on attending that in September.
In Omaha.
I was searching, trying to remember where is it this year. Okay, NCARB for our architects. So the annual meeting was in Austin, Texas. That was really nice, and Mike and I both attended that. And I have to start out by saying how thrilled and honored we are that our very own Arizona gentleman, Ed Marley, was elected to the board, the NCARB Board of Directors, in the position of treasurer.
Yep. Wow.
So that's pretty exciting. Ed is a former board member many years and has served on the EAC committee and just assisted the board in so many ways for many years. I don't even know how many years, a lot of years.
He's also the chairman of the L&R committee.
Oh, that's right. Thank you, Kurt. Yep. He's amazing. So that's just really exciting. I'm going to throw a couple things out, Mike, and then you add to it and tell me what I missed here. I mean, it was such a good experience. I didn't get to attend in person last year. It was virtual, and you feel very disconnected. It's hard. And I was so new at that time, too. It was kind of awkward. So I was really glad to go in person. And it was very interesting how much the topic of sustainability came up with the architects. And, what was the term? Net zero?
Net zero. Carbon neutral is another one.
Yeah. I love it. Carbon neutral. Like no carbon footprint. It was fascinating. And, you know, I mean, Arizona is one of the states that doesn't require any continuing education, which every conference I've been to so far, everywhere, whether it was a national association or like the Western Region of Land Surveyors, every time people are coming after me on what's wrong with you, why can't you have continuing education in Arizona? And all I do is just try to educate on what process that would take, you know. And I say that because California, I was so impressed. They actually added 5 additional hours requirement of continuing education specifically related to sustainability and net zero in architecture. Wow. And I thought, wow, that's
first state.
Impressive. And they presented on it, and it was just fascinating to me. I'm sure Mike's more well versed in it, but for me it was just wow.
We are the only state in the country that has no continuing education requirement for architects. The only one.
Smartest of the bunch.
So, yeah. Other topics. Fairness and licensure, always. I mean, everywhere we go. Best practice for board members, promoting responsible regulation, exploring different licensure models, things that we hear about across every profession. And then governance through the DEI or diversity, equity, inclusion in everything, looking at that. And NCARB actually established a separate committee just to address DEI issues and requirements, things like that. So that's impressive. And then the other thing I was really excited about is that their national exam, the ARE, they are updating that. They're offering two new accommodations for candidates who have English as a second language, and also extending 20% extended testing time and the use of a word-to-word translation dictionary. So that's pretty significant for their testing, and no small feat to do that. In fact, they commented about the staff and the psychometrician consultants that work on these exams forever, that they conducted extensive research and analysis into the performance of the candidates who are not native English speakers. And based on their findings, determined that offering these industry standard accommodations will encourage greater accessibility and greater equity in the licensure process. So, very positive thing.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add to that is there were 7 resolutions that were presented to the voting delegates, and they all passed, most of them unanimously. One is a reciprocity with the United Kingdom, so that your architecture license, if you have a NAP credit degree, you can also practice in the UK and vice versa. And as Judith said, we elevated the task force, the DEI, from a task force to a full standing committee, which is now at the same level as the examination education committees, which is pretty big. So,
and that agreement with the United Kingdom was really a hot button for the regions. I mean, we're always part of the Western region in whatever association, and we are much more free-willing, accommodating than the East Coast. And so that was really a difficult thing, because most of the Western region is looking for more accessibility and acceptance of non-accredited degrees, because, you know, it can be a degree in architecture that's not NAB accredited, and we accept that, and most of the Western region states do. But the fact of the matter is, and we didn't want to delay that or be against it really wholly, because it what was the percentage they said overall? That agreement is going to help so many people, that mutual agreement with the United Kingdom. And the percentage of council record holders that don't have the NAB accredited degree are, it's so small. So, but they did say that they would revisit it and try to continue to work with the United Kingdom, because basically the United Kingdom is the one that says,
we want this.
Yeah, if it's not accredited, we're not gonna do this with you, we're not gonna dance, so.
It's more of an impact here in Arizona, because we have a lot of registered architects who don't have a NAB accredited degree, because we don't have to have that here. And there's a 14 other jurisdictions that are similar to us. So those architects, if they don't have a NAB accredited degree, they're kind of stuck. They can't take advantage of this reciprocity. So we're going to revisit it, talk about it more, but this is kind of the first step in, you know, evolving the process. But it was great to be there in person. Had some good quality time with Judith, which is always nice. And we had some good steaks, and it was good.
Well, it's Texas, right?
Yes, you got to have some steak. Got to have a steak.
So. Okay. And our engineers, NCWS, a lot going on there, too, Mr. Sales.
Yeah, so they've been having the monthly calls leading up to the annual conference in August. It's going to be right after we have our board meeting on a Monday, and then the conference starts on Tuesday and goes through Friday. So they got a nice thing on Tuesday for new members, which I qualify for, so I'm going to go, and they're going to get me up to a little more speed on things. So just the new folks from around the states, there's quite a few of them, they're going to be attending that on Tuesday. But and they got a few just different motions and stuff they're working through that they'll bring up at the conference, and affecting universities, and then all the other sorts of little things sprinkled around. So there'll be a lot more to report, I guess, in September, because we've had the meeting right before.
Right, that's the end of August.
Yeah.
That's why we bumped our board meeting to Monday.
Yeah, it's Monday, and then I know I fly out Monday afternoon after this one, late in the afternoon, just to make sure.
Right.
That'll be the one day we're late on, so it's a raw long meeting, so.
Me too, so Yeah, I think I'm with you on that flight. And sustainability is something else that's a hot topic with the Engineering Association as well. And DEI, really a lot of the same things, licensure mobility, all of that. So their Uniform Procedures and Legislative Guidelines, UPLG committee, have 37 amended position statements. I won't go through all of those, but the one that was that really caught me the most was the remote sensing technologies, which I was a little confused on because it seemed like it was civil engineering, and yet they reference in the practice of surveying specifically safeguarding public health, safety, and welfare using remote sensing technology, not including but not limited to both aerial and ground-based hydrographic to perform professional services. Oh, sorry, you know what? I'm mixing that up with the geodesy and geomatics, I think.
Geomatics, okay.
Sorry, Scott. All right, yeah.
It's okay. They're monitoring stuff one way or another.
So yeah, they are. They are. So I'll just have to learn some more about that anyway. And Scott and I will look at the proposals and amendments and things like that and come back about those. And same thing with the engineers. The Western Zone is I don't want to say looser in their requirements, but kind of. I mean, they're more accepting of non-accredited and other pathways to licensure. So Arizona always fits right in with anything anybody's suggesting. Except for continuing education when we have to say sorry.
So we don't change the clocks.
Yeah, we don't change clocks. Right. Okay. Anything else on NCWS right now? Okay. So at our board chair's direction and the encouragement of three of our national associations that we work with, I recently attended NCSL, which was the National Conference of State Legislatures, and it was a meeting specific to occupational licensure, and there were several other executive directors from Arizona, various boards, medical, psychology, physical therapy, most of them were health boards, I think, except me, and jurisdictions from all over the nation, and members of the legislature from various states. It was very interesting, and deregulation is always a topic. It's fascinating to me to hear so many different perspectives on regulatory issues from all of the various groups that were represented. A lot of really good presentations. Some of the opinions were varied based on industry needs, such as I'm going to give the example of like nursing and teachers, because there's like over 5 million nurses in the United States, and looking at compacts and mobility and talking about universal licensure, just the pros and cons of each of these different kind of methods. But at the end of the day, the takeaway for all of us, and I spoke with some of my colleagues here in the state, and it's just the same thing that we're always thinking about, that boards need to always be looking at how we can streamline our processes whenever possible, so that we don't have anything unnecessary or burdensome in any way, while making sure that we fulfill the board's mission of protecting the health, safety, and welfare of the public. And I will mention that David Cox, who's the CEO of NCWS, was a presenter at one of the sessions at this conference, and so that was a treat to see a smiling face there I recognized. And he did a great job on licensure mobility. And why is everybody talking about that? So that was a good experience, and I'm glad I got to be a part of that. And I think that's it.
Yep. Judith, I did have one other item on there. The board was reached out to from the Coyote campaign
The Coyote Crisis Collaborative.
Yeah, so they reached out related to safety and our mission there, and they were doing a targeted event readiness forum related to theoretical, or just what happens when an aircraft crashes, and all the different fire, medical, emergency, and stuff have to go around. So they were asked for an engineer if something were to come up. So
I was so glad Scott could participate in that. That's an organization that I worked with closely during COVID, and related to all of the death issues and mass fatality and things like that. And I knew they were doing this exercise, and I said, you know, you should talk with an engineer and think about infrastructure issues if you had a major catastrophe, like at the airport or something like that. So she was really excited to have Scott involved with that.
It was like a three quarters of a day item over at the Willow Conference Center, and they there's probably 60 plus people in the room. It was a packed house. Fire, medical, the doctors. I mean, I was blown away by all of the emergency personnel there in the room for the East Valley and everything. It made me feel a lot better if something were to happen. These folks got it down, and just those points of contact. National Guard was there. The FBI had my back all day. He was sitting right behind me all day. So
felt very safe.
The NTSB was on one side, so it was a good scenario and run through, and so I provided a little bit of input here and there where needed, but they were doing most everything. Some of that was way above my understanding for the health and safety stuff, but
it's amazing how all, you know, varied entities and professions all come together really in something like that. It's that kind of event, and it's good to know people.
Interesting thing, so just want to mention that too in the
thank you.
The news and meetings section of 13.
As far as future board meetings, we've got our next date. Suggested topics for future meetings, just an update that we do have people scheduled to come in July to talk about construction staking still. And if the board is amiable to this, Mike and I at this conference were approached by Tom Banks, who is the CEO for the Council for Interior Design Qualifications, CIDQ, and Matt Burge, I'm probably going to say that wrong, who is CIDQ's Government Affairs and Advocacy Manager. They would really love to attend a future board meeting and give a brief presentation. And I thought that would be a great idea. I suggested perhaps the September meeting, and felt like that would be a great time as well, if that's agreeable to the board. I'll let him know that.
Is that an item that'll come first in the agenda, or is that one of those that floats at the end?
Do we want to subject him to all of our enforcement stuff?
We
do want to put that
early.
Yeah, that might be good. So yeah,
I'll find out if he's going to be virtual or in person, because I don't even know where he lives. Not here. Somewhere else.
In the cloud.
In the cloud. And then I know that, Julie, what was the individual's name that one was supposed to be called in the public?
Schwagel?
Mr. Schwagel? He seemed to... Can you tell me anything about him? Because I can't remember. I know we talked about
it. Very passionate about...
Transportation engineering.
Transportation. Or traffic engineering.
Traffic.
Making that bringing that to NCES.
He seemed very knowledgeable and would very much like to present. That's why we encouraged him to come to call with the public, so that you could then put it as a future agenda item. If you would like us to reach out to him to see if he would still like to do that, we could do that and agendize him to actually present at a future meeting.
What's his first name?
Ask if he can find a solution to Dutch Brothers and their traffic challenges.
Man.
Yeah, I know.
So our traffic engineers are a PE, but there's no traffic assigned?
Right, we don't have traffic or transportation.
But Dr. Angel take a position on this yet? I'm surprised he didn't bring that up.
All our specific disciplines, that one's not.
Wow.
A lot of times our traffic engineer is either hired by the architect or under the civil engineer, so it's typically how we've had them do that before.
I mean, I would be open to hearing this presentation.
Yeah,
why not?
Okay, so help me do that, Julie.
On it.
Okay, and I don't have anything else.
Good.
All right. Anything else on future agendas anybody want to discuss? All right. We are adjourned. Back to work. Eat some donuts. Goodbye.
good luck. And thanks for working on the board. It's been a pleasure.
It's been interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting indeed.
Recording stopped.